You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Are you guys questioning or doubting whether or not Ron McGill could pull off a 360 dunk?
I mean, well, he's saying at one point, like he just admitted that, he hasn't played in a while.
I can't even dunk it now with one hand.
Really?
I mean, it's pathetic. No, it's really pathetic. It's
a little rude of Dan to be late here, 8 minutes late to your segment, huh?
No, it's very typical. It's very typical. Oh. Very typical of Dan. You know, he's that way.
You only planned his trip where he got engaged, like the best trip of his life, like, and then he's just late for your segment.
I planned that more for Val.
Actually, Ron, I do have a question for you. Can you take us through the day? I watched the video of you naming the hippo after Dan, and it was fantastic. And Dan did it with a minimal amount of sweat. Like, he seemed very, very relaxed, which is odd
he's not used to God. He's not you. Okay.
Can you kind of take us through that day and explain to the audience what exactly happened? Because the video is fantastic, but I'm not certain how many people in our audience have seen that video.
Well, it was a pivotal day. I mean, this was something, you know, how long have we wanted to name this hippo Dan Le Batour? The hippo wanted to be named Dan Le Batour. It was like one of the highest things for the hippo itself. And then all of a sudden we get this, you know, this corporate block that made everything impossible, made everything so difficult. And it was frustrating. So, you know, I ended up had some naming contest where they ended up naming the thing aubergine, which means eggplant in some foreign language. And everybody was like, oh, yawn, yawn, yawn. The thing could have been named Dan Le Batour. I got a million people hitting me on social media. I can't believe you didn't name it Dan Le Batour. And then finally, you know, here the door opens up. So I invited Dan out. I got with the staff and said, listen. And they go, well, it's been officially named aubergine and people paid online to, you know, have the opportunity to name. I go, listen, what about the stage name? What about the real name? Okay. I mean, stage names are much more important. That's what you know people about. Well, the stage name could be Dan Le Batour. And I said, and we can maybe raise some money for pygmy hippo conservation. And they went, okay. So that's what we did. So we went out there and we met, you know, the thing that was special for me was to introduce Dan, to see Dan. When Dan meets Dan, that's a special thing. It's a special thing because you saw the hippo open his mouth, those big tusks. And I was proud of Dan because Dan did not flinch. Now, I think it's probably because Val was there and he didn't want to seem like some spineless weenie ass in front of Val, but he was really very good. And I think he grew an affinity for this thing. He looked at its eyes looked at him, and all of a sudden the two Dans became one. And it was a beautiful moment. It really was. It was a beautiful moment.
Love at first sight, it seems like.
Yeah. It was. It was.
Greg, go ahead.
Hey, Ron, how you doing?
I'm good, Greg. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. In the state of Florida and across America, it seems as if the sport of greyhound racing is on its last legs.
Thank you.
What do you think about that?
I'm all for it being on its last legs. You know, I've known the industry too long. I've been around some people in the industry. First of all, these are very high-strung dogs. These dogs should not be put into that situation where they've got to do these runs in such a way that it really just adds to their excitability. Anybody who's adopted greyhounds will tell you that this is a very delicate, high-strung dog that should not be put in that situation. But more importantly, what happens is they have a very short life in that arena. And once that life is over, so many of those dogs end up getting euthanized, end up being abused. It is really a horrific thing. It's like throw out the animal when it's no longer useful to you instead of really loving the animal. So I'm so happy that is finally coming to an end.
Ron, somebody decided to scrape the algae off the back of a manatee to where yes. It actually read the word Trump on the back of it. Now, setting aside the amount of evil that actually is,
right?
What exactly is the penalty for somebody actually touching a wild manatee?
I forget. I think it's a $500 minimum penalty. It's not necessarily defined as touching, simply just harassing. Is the definition. So you don't have to touch it, but you can just get into its personal space and affect its natural behavior, and that can be listed as harassing. And that, I think, has a minimum penalty of $500. But it is a federal offense as an endangered species, a protected species, federally protected species. So I'm not sure what the coexisting jail sentence may be, but it's a serious offense.
Ron, in terms of like a documentary that you'd like to see or a book that you'd like to read, what are like the three animals that you, even with all your knowledge, are the most curious about?
Well, I've always been very curious about the snow leopard. I mean, we've talked about that on the show. This is an animal that is one of the most beautiful big cats in the world. It is found in one of the most remote places on Earth in this most inhospitable habitat. I'd love to know more about that animal. I've watched him hunt. I think I talked to, I shared a video with you guys on YouTube of this one grabbing a freaking mountain goat at the top of a mountain plummeting all the way down the mountain, never letting go of that freaking goat, hitting the bottom and still having the goat and surviving. I mean, this is an animal that just absolutely kicks butt, and so little is known about it. A guy named George Shallow really was doing the original studies many years ago, but I think that's something I really love to see more about. You know, I'm really fascinated about whales. I mean, I'd love to know more about the sperm whale. The thing is that those animals can dive so deep that we can't follow them. So we don't know what's happening down there in the deep. We really don't know how they're catching these giant squid. Everybody's seen, you know, the Moby Dick film with this huge giant squid. And you see these sperm whales that have these puck marks, scars on their face from these battles with these monstrous squids underneath the surface. I mean, miles down beneath the surface. Can you imagine seeing a video of this freaking huge whale? This thing's 100 feet long and this massive squid that's 80 feet long wrapped around it and they're turning around it. That would be epic, man. So I'd love to see something like that.
Ron, if the zoo, for whatever reason, took all of the animals except one type of animal and that animal then goes to every single exhibit, which animal would you build a zoo around that's just exclusive to one animal?
That's a good question.
Ooh, that's a tough question. Yeah. Man. That is a tough question. You know, this is going to sound probably boring to a lot of people, but I've always got to look at, you know, what people see when they see animals. You want to see activity. You want to see something that's engaging, right? So if I was going to do one animal, I'd have a huge mob of meerkats. Because it is nonstop, brother. You got meerkats doing sentinel duty. You got them screaming. You got them digging. You got them fighting. You got them breeding. You got them taking care of the babies. There's something always going on. People say, well, Ron, what about a tiger? It's beautiful. Yeah, but a tiger is going to be sleeping under a tree for about 80% of the time. Same thing with lions. Same thing with almost all big cats. What about giraffe? Well, yeah, giraffe, you can see them walk around. They may be eating, but they're beautiful. But where's the excitement? Where's the, you know, people want to look at animals and see some of themselves. So you might say, well, what about chimps? Chimps, gorillas, people love primates, right? Yeah, but primates are like us in a lot of ways. If they don't have to do anything to get food, if they don't have to work for things, they're going to be laying down being lazy. So in the long run, if you're going to have every exhibit full of the same animal, it's going to be just boring to see a bunch of animals sleeping. Whereas meerkats, man, but remember, guys, they made a whole successful television series for 5 years on Animal Planet called Meerkat Man, which is basically that. It's just going in a room with a bunch of animals just totally, you know, interchanging, fighting, breeding, looking out. They're a blast to watch, so I'd have to go with meerkats.
Rod, I am deeply concerned because we've all been home so much, I have never had a stronger bond with my dog, Finny. In fact, my entire family. And so I'm wondering that once we get back to some sort of normalcy, is there going to be, like, how would you advise people? Because I feel like my pet's going to be devastated once we're no longer home all the time because Finny has gotten used to it. What's the best way for people to transition once we get back to some sort of normalcy as it relates to their pets?
I'm proud of you, Stu Gatz. I'm proud of you for having that kind of perspective, because that's kind of rare from you to have some kind of compassion for these animals. But you know what? You're very right. There's so many people that have been working from home, that have been home so much, and animals, especially pets like dogs and cats, have become accustomed to that. And that is a bond that now is going to have to be reversed. So, you know, the best thing I can tell you folks is, if possible, do not do that cold turkey. You know, if possible, if you can work it out with your employer to say, okay, listen, okay, I'm working from home every day this week. Can I work from home twice a week? Can I work from home once a week? You've got to try to ease into it. To go cold turkey is going to be stressful for a lot of animals. And it is a problem. There's no clear cut answer to it, Stu Gatz, but the best thing I can tell you is to wean it off of them as slowly as possible, as slowly as your employer will allow you to do.
What kind of damage, Ron, could that stress do to an animal? Because I've heard of dogs and other animals that have anxiety, separation anxiety. What can it actually do to them?
Well, what it usually does is it incites bad behavior in the animals. You know, they'll start maybe defecating in the house when they never used to do that before. They'll start tearing apart things in the house, going into the trash can, ripping out things out of drawers and start tearing it up. You know, you'll come home to this explosion of a mess that the dog created, or it might start just urinating on the wall. I mean, there's different things that the dogs do that are a product of stress. It really is. And not just dogs. Cats will do the same thing in many ways. They'll stop using the litter box. They'll start going into the bed. You know, they'll start going where your scent is most prevalent, and they'll start marking their scent on it to maybe in an attempt to bring you back. I mean, I'm being anthropomorphic in that sense, but the bottom line is, yeah, they go through a separation anxiety, and because of that, it leads them to bad behavior, and that can kind of become doubly negative, because then you come home, you get mad at the animal for having the negative behavior. It's having the negative behavior because you left it. And so people have to have a more open mind with that and understand that you have to generally ease animals into this change in lifestyle.
Ron, I wanted to circle back for a second to my greyhound question, because neighbors of mine used to have a couple of whippets, which looked
small
like
greyhound.
Exactly. And I'm wondering, would you recommend a retired racing greyhound as a pet?
You know, for a person who has the patience and time, yes. I've known people who have adopted those animals, and they have turned out to be incredible, incredible animals. I mean, you know, one of my dearest friends, a very, very strong radio personality here in Miami, Jade Alexander, is one of the greatest greyhound advocates you'll ever speak to. And she'll tell you what incredible loving animals they can be. It is not a Labrador retriever. This is not an animal you will adopt for your three-year-old to come play with in the house, because they're fairly high strung. You know, you need some patience with them. But if it's a retiree who has the patience, has the time, I think you could find them to be really amazing animals.
Ron, dog owners tend to do a bad job in breeding their dogs, yes. As you can see with the English Bulldog. What's the proper way to actually breed a dog?
Well, you know, if you're trying to breed a dog to keep a bloodline, to keep a pedigree, the best thing is to look at the pedigree to understand that, you know, if your dog's mother or father had pretty bad hip dysplasia, you know, I wouldn't breed that dog. There's a gene there. And people have a hard time with that. You know, people get their animals, say, oh my God, I love him so much. He's going to get old and I want to breed him because I want to make sure that the same dog is passed on. First of all, there's no guarantee that whatever puppies the dog that you have has is going to be like the dog that you have. I've said this over and over again. You certainly can breed dogs for temperament, but the overwhelming majority of the temperament of the behavior of a dog is a direct reflection on how that dog is raised. So if you raise the dog properly, if you give it compassion, you give it love, it will give you that back. It's these dogs that have been, you know, mistreated, that have been abused. Many times they're picked up, you know, and they're put into a rescue facility and then adopted right away. And they still have this horrific fear, this horrific memory of the abuse. And then the people bring it home and it might snap at them or it might not be very friendly. And people go, oh, no, I don't want this dog. I want to breed for a dog. No, these are all dogs that are, you know, victims of their previous life. So if you're going to breed a dog, which I really don't suggest you do unless you are going to do that for a living. You know, people who just want to, oh, I want to have puppies. I want to breed the dog. Guys, we have so many animals that are looking for homes. I cannot overstress this. You know, I had a schnauzer that I paid a tremendous amount of money for that would have been a great animal. And the first thing I did when I got home with him is I had him neutered, okay? Because I knew that there were enough animals out there. My wife always wanted a miniature schnauzer. It was probably one of the best decisions I made. We had him for 15, almost 16 years. And I got to tell you something, it was beautiful. It hurt so much when we lost him that I don't know if I can have another dog. But having said that, I neutered him because it was the responsible thing to do. Unless that is your profession, unless that's how you're making a living, by contributing to a breed and not just trying to create pets for other people, don't do that. Don't breed your animals. Spay them, neuter them. It's better for their own behavior. It's really better for their health. And it's better for the overall population of so many cats and dogs that just don't have forever homes.
All right. He is Bob Barker. He is 60-year-old, Cuban and tall.
Oh, but here we go.
He's Bob Barker. I want to, before we get you out of here, I just want to say a couple of things here about our relationship over the years with Ron McGill, which has been a really super magical thing in so many spiritual, emotional, and wonderful ways. Because Ron McGill, honest to God, when I say that for this show, weirdly, his mustache has been a lighthouse, fighting for his sensibilities, caring for animals, and doing stuff outside of sports that was about animals, even if it pissed people off. It was a great delight to have over many years this be a really popular segment, even though it's weird for ESPN Radio to have this televised for 10 years, and they did so reluctantly, as we enumerated any number of times. So Ron has repaid that with the following. This is why it's a love story, and I'm going to make everyone a little uncomfortable here, but I'm going to do it for a reason. Ron has repaid that by allowing my family to see his zoo with a personal tour from a modern-day Tarzan who talks to the animals, talks to them. I know you just put down a giraffe with whom you had a Pongo, right? Was it Pongo?
Yeah, it was Pongo. Yeah.
You just put that, you put the giraffe down, and I'm sorry to make it a sad story, but I want to talk to you about the emotion of that as well. But before I do any of that, I want to explain, Ron set up my engagement, my proposal to my wife. Ron, my first date, or one of my first dates with my wife, was getting that zoo. I was trying to wow her, and Tarzan showed her the animals, and that's it. She was done after that. It's the only way that she was conquered. And so Ron has been involved at every step of the way with taking great care, because he's a romantic at heart. And what I want to tell the audience, Ron, because you just, again, you got a hippo named after me, Dan Le Batard. You're always
it
doing
right there. Right there. That's it.
You're selling hippo Dan Le Batard wax things. You're going to sell those at the zoo?
No, there's only 10 of them. They're a very limited edition.
Wow. 10,
but they say Dan Le Batard on the front from one of those incredibly historic wax machines. It was made as a very limited series of 10.
Of 10. All right. Well, I'm yammering. Maybe we'll give them away to the audience as a reward for this pirate radio phase. They'll enjoy having that. But what I wanted to ask the audience, Ron, because they've been supporting us and you and this weird thing that we do, tell the people, beyond taking care of their pets and neutering them, tell them how they can help your endowment. If they want to care about the animals, and you've done all of this for years for free for us, Ron, and you're always saying, I can never repay you because everywhere I go, people say, Ron McGill, you've done this for free. If they want to help something that you care about, my favorite charity is your charity. So please tell the people how it is that they can help you so that the audience can support this thing that I love that is very much a love story.
Well, I appreciate your words, Dan. I really haven't done it for free because people would pay a tremendous amount of money to have been part of this family with you. It's been a real pleasure. So I'm going to get the schmutz on the side. But let me tell you this, guys, I didn't come to work for the zoo over 40 years ago to work for an attraction. Contrary to popular belief, I'm not a huge fan at all of taking any animal out of the wild and putting it in captivity. And by the way, we're not allowed to say in captivity anymore. Now we say under human care because it sounds less of being in captivity. But let's face it, it's in captivity. So here's the deal. I started here over 40 years ago, and I firmly believe that if zoos are going to be the conservation organization they're supposed to be, they should be contributing significant amounts of money to protect animals in the wild. We spend millions of dollars here at the zoo building these state-of-the-art exhibits to house these animals for people to come to the zoo and see them. And yet we haven't really put aside the right amount of money, or really in many cases no amount of money, to help protect those animals in the wild. And I've always felt that was hypocrisy. And quite frankly, I was almost to the point where I was getting ready to leave the zoo because I just didn't believe in that. I believe that, listen, folks, if the zoo is the last place that you can safely see an animal, then we as an institution have been an epic failure. So after getting fed up with the fact that I didn't think we were putting enough money into conservation in the field itself, I said, I'm going to start an endowment here under the umbrella of the Zoo Foundation. And people laughed at me. They said, you're not going to be able to raise the money because to start an endowment, because that was another thing, guys. I always felt that, listen, we have to have sustainability. You know, you can't raise money every year and just, you have to have a corpus of money that produces money. So, you know, every year you're able to do something in perpetuity. So that was my point, to raise an endowment. They laughed at me. They said, well, I have an endowment. You're going to have to raise a minimum of $1 million. So whatever it takes, I'll work till I can't take my last breath anymore. And I'll try to, you know, I've never been able to ask people for money. I just try to be able to tell a story and hopefully people care about it, say, how can I help? And this is how they can help. Make a long story short, we established the Ron McGill Conservation Endowment. It's the only conservation endowment at the zoo. And we were able to raise a significant amount of money, thanks in part to Dan, to a lot of the listeners. I can't tell you how many listeners have contributed. It's been amazing. That money's gone into a corpus. The proudest thing in my life, in my professional life, is that endowment. It is what I hope will be my legacy. It is the only reason I continue to work here at the zoo. We now have close to $2 million in that endowment, and we're able to provide tens of thousands of dollars every year to people on the ground. We buy vehicles for research in Kenya. We buy vehicles for research for rescue and rehabilitation in Panama. We're buying radio collars to track animals, buying all kinds of equipment to help these researchers and conservationists help keep those animals alive in the wild where they belong, not in a zoo. So that's the reason I started that. It's a totally tax deductible. I want to raise it as much as I can, because the more money that's in there, the more that we can give away. We also give away scholarships to students who have chosen a career path in wildlife conservation. So to answer Dan's question, the best way you can donate is you can go to zoomiami.org. You'll go into the conservation area there. It says the Ron McGill Conservation Endowment. You can hit the donate button. It's a totally tax deductible donation. Your money will never actually get spent. Your money gets into the corpus that can't get touched. It just produces more and more money every year. So like I tell people, it's not like you're making a donation. You're making an investment. And that investment will continue to give money year after year after year to help keep animals in the wild where they belong, which is what I think the number one purpose of a zoo should be.
All right, Ron. So before we get out of here, very quickly, because I want you to give me numbers later today about how strong our audience supported what has been really 10 years. No lie. This has been 10 years of free work from Ron McGill. And he represents, Chris, you thought that you represented the greatest fight in our family on behalf of something. We have had to fight for the Ron McGill segment across a decade in a way that's super easy for us, because we told you the show would not change when it left Miami. And the first order of business was to try and take away one of our most popular features, and we would not let them. And so I think you're going to be surprised by what the audience does today. But as you did that moving thing, and it was moving, Chris Cody, son of Greg Cody, wanted to get in here with his joke to punctuate the segment. So go ahead, Chris.
I mean, it's just clear with everybody donating to Ron's endowment, Ron will be well endowed.
Damn!
Oh, boom, boom, boom. What's it?
Baby!
Do we still have that sound effect?
It's kind of a clunky setup. He was put on a stage. He had to deliver it. That didn't happen organically. I mean,
baby.
I liked it.
Guys, it has been a slice of heaven. That's all I can tell you is that I told Dan from the first time, I remember the first time when it went national, I said, Dan, I really thank you for the opportunity. He goes, no, you're going with me. I go, no, Dan, come on. Come on. No, you're going with me. And listen, you guys say the show didn't. I know, Dan, it was you. And I was so scared. I said, my God, Dan, you're going to put your whole thing in jeopardy of this incredible opportunity with ESPN. And Dan just said, no, you're going to be on the show. And I cannot tell you, at the risk of sounding overly patronizing, how much respect I have for you for just doing what you believe in. I hope that's, well, I know that's why you have such an incredible families.
Very moving, Ron. Thank you for being on with us. We were all touched by your appearance. Thank you, sir.
Hey, man.
Hi, guys. Give my best to Val.
Thank you.
All right, Ron. We love you.
Cody, I don't feel like this has been enough of a Cody Tuesday. I wish we had more. Do you have a Back in My Day? Do you have one?
Yes. Oh, yes, sir. I sure do.
Oh, let's do it. Please. Yes! What's it about? Are you excited about it?
Well, we're going to see about that.
All right.
All right.
You got it out of your system there, Dan?
Well endowed.
That's a good joke, man.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Brain cells. So, in the next minute or so, while I'm doing this, almost 2 million neurons, 14 billion synapses, and 7.5 miles of myelinated fibers will be destroyed inside my skull. Don't worry for me. Probably happening to you too. We lose brain cells by the bushel and by degrees gradually. It's a residue of aging. Attacks our ability to remember and to store and process more and more information. It's that that makes life more and more difficult as rampant technology gallops without relent. The latest fad seeming to last about a minute and a half before it's replaced by the new hot thing. Whatever happened to three local channels? One thing about advances in technology is that nobody ever actually asks for them. They just happen, pretty much against our will, quite frankly. Amazon? I remember when someone said that word and it probably meant the rainforest covering almost 3 million square miles of South America. Google. That used to mean Barney Google, you know, Snuffy Smith's sidekick in the comic strip.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Reddit? What the hell is Reddit? And why? Back in my day, Reddit was something you did to a Greg Cody column in the Miami Herald.
Oh, God.
Or to a book.
Hold on.
A book you actually held, by the way, not one swallowed up inside Kindle. I can't keep up with apps. Whatever happened to Vine? It died on the... Is Snapchat still a thing? The hell is Twitch? Let's all meet on MySpace and solve the world's problems. I need a full-time personal assistant just to help me navigate and provide a running glossary of terms. So TikTok is a video sharing network service, right? Wait, like YouTube? Why do we need another one?
Oh, no.
Somebody the other day mentioned to me WhatsApp. I said, much.
No.
What's up with you?
No.
Streaming services is a phrase I keep hearing more and more. I'm not positive what that's all about. I thought live streaming was what I did standing over a urinal. Netflix, Hulu, Peacock, YouTube TV, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Crackle. What about Snap and Pop?
Oh, no.
HBO Max, Fubo TV,
no.
Apple Plus. Somebody suggested I try Sling TV. What's that for viewers with broken arms?
No.
And there's the brand new startup everybody's talking about. LebaTube.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's a tsunami.
No.
It's trampling my brain cells like motorcycles tearing through a rose garden.
No.
Somebody told me they're investing with Robinhood. No idea what that means. Wouldn't have known Bad Bunny if he hopped right up next to me. Christopher told me he's investing in Bitcoin. Christopher, what did you tell me that was?
The cryptocurrency.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like that answers everything. Crypto. Crypto. Sounds like a little too close to the mausoleum with my name on it. Nowadays, I hear there's even an app, I forget what it's called. It lets C and D list celebrities charge fans for money for personalized 30-second videos.
No,
that actually sounds like a great idea.
Oh, no.
Baby!
No.
Here's what I do to get away from the rampage.
No.
Or to try. I close my eyes. I'm transported to the wood paneled shag carpeted den of 1440. It's 1965. I walk to the Zenith console TV, adjust the tin foil on the left rabbit ear, and turn the channel knob by hand. Click, click, click to the number 4 and drift away. Ah, let's see what Marshall, Matt Dillon, Festus, and Miss Kitty are up to down at the Long Branch Saloon.
Yes.
Because the clock says it's time for Gunsmoke. My wife nudges me from my reverie. I tell her what I dreamed. She scoffs. She says, don't you know, you can watch old Gunsmoke episodes anytime you want. All you have to do is pay to subscribe to CBS All Access. I start to softly weep as another million neurons disappear. I'm Greg Cody,
yes,
and that's how it works.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen,
yes,
Greg Cody of the Miami Herald.
Amazing.
Shamed over the course of the last few years because he would not try on Back in My Day. That is him trying inexplicably. Ron McGill is still in the Zoom chat. Ron, how did you feel about seeing live a Greg Cody musty Back in My Day that basically railed against every single technological development in the last 30 years?
It was epic. I got to have it in print so I can frame it.
Thank you.
It was
we'll make that happen for you.
It was a masterpiece.
Old
by Greg.
Guy radio. Okay, Ron, thank you. Actually, Ron, would you be kind enough to settle? Actually, you know what we should do? We should get Arlene in here to settle a dispute as the litigator on me and Cody stuff in our post game. Ron, thank you, sir. It's been a great voyage, and it's about to get a lot better because you've done some stuff. What my brother likes to do videos with you. They made some ridiculous sounds. Worldofsui.com. What did you do? What did Angel Resto do with you in that section on worldofsui.com?
Oh, my God. I'm looking at all these clips. I didn't realize you guys saved all that stuff. I'm an idiot. I'm an absolute idiot.
Oh, it's just you making animal sounds? That's what's on the website? Just you impersonating all sorts of animals?
No, it's me. All the clips, yeah, with a lot of them making animal sounds and me doing a lot of the VOs for the videos and stuff. I'm an idiot. I listen to that stuff. I'm cringing.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.